Welcome to the Firm, episode 2. I'm in a bit of a weird one today, because we've both, me and Alex, have been playing a couple of games the past couple of days, and they have been horrible, grindy games.
Yeah, it's the first two games that I've walked away from and gone, actually, you know what, I don't think I actually enjoyed that game.
Yeah, we played on Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, actually. I think we both went in going, hey, how about a game of Guild Ball?
Yeah, right, absolutely again. Desperate to scratch
like,
the itch.
High-fiving on the way in. It literally just left, going like, well, I guess I'm just going to go.
Yeah, okay. Thank fuck that game's over.
Yeah, shit. But we also, mainly, on the two games we played over the weekend, and we played Minerva. Well, I played Minerva on my hunting team both times. And we're going to get into a bit about how she played, but one of the things we want to talk about as well is, like, the kind of angry mindset of getting into the game.
Getting salty.
Yeah, it's a weird one to, like, pin down. Because when you're in a game, and especially, like, a look-based game like Guild Ball, like, if it's sheer mathematics, or, well, again, like, say, like, you're on Call of Duty, some video game, where it's kind of controlled element. A lot of games aren't that really random-heavy. Like, it's considered good form in a game to try and eliminate randomness, but Guild Ball by its very nature is random.
Yeah, it's sort of, I think that the mechanics and structures and sort of the design of the game is all very tight, but then there is always, whenever you're playing a dice game, there's always going to be that random element.
Yeah, the idea that you can go into, okay, we both had turns where we went, okay, we don't even need great dice, we just need middling dice.
Below average. Yeah. Below average would have done.
And then when you roll and you get nothing, like, okay, we had several turns where I've gone, like, I did so badly on that turn and I rolled so terribly. I felt like you've just had two turns in a row.
Yeah.
It's not like I've played and made the wrong decision. I feel like I've played, the numbers haven't gone my way, and then just nothing has happened.
Yeah. Like when you had a full stack on Theron.
Yeah.
Going into Tentacles, 4s and 1, rolling your full stack and just getting nothing. Three times in a row that you got no results.
Yeah, just hitting. When on my team in particular, where you've only got 10 influence, when you go, okay, Theron's my big gap, and he's not got a bad tack by any means. If nine from one hit, you don't even have to do like some cheeky character.
That's it. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for that one damage to come with the snare to take him from 4-1 to 3-1.
Yeah,
and that's all you wanted from that first roll.
And you're like going, okay, if you start out, you carry on from there, and like going, shit, I've blown 3 influence. And my first thing's like, for 2, what can Senna get out of that 2? What does Hearn get with that 3? What does any character, like, what does Jake do with 4 influence?
Yeah.
And when you get into that mindset, like when you have that kind of, I think that's in the area of Guild Ball, I think that's one of the things that spurs on being really angry at the game. If not particularly, even the way your opponent plays. Like, I don't think I've ever played a game of Guild Ball where I'm going like, I can't believe he's done that. I can't believe he's done something that made him, in chances of winning, increasing as opposed to decreasing.
Apart from when Benediction got 4 armour and you lost.
Oh, no, that's bullshit. Yeah, fuck Benediction. He should be removed from the game. Fuck Benediction. Remove him. It could be a goalpost from now on. But fuck that guy. Fuck the church. I'll fuck him ahead of time. I already know they're going to be ridiculous. With their pride. I'm calling it ahead of time, right? I want people to look back when the church come out and hearing this and go, oh, ridiculous. I've got 3 girls, turn 1. You know what? I'm thinking ahead. Is it possible? They've got Mist. They've got King Cumbria. You can't get the counter goal. I think you could potentially have some free. No, I'm not even getting into it. But the point is, right? When you roll and you roll badly, it's not the opponent doing stuff. Like there are plenty of times we've played each other and we've done like a counter attack or a roll and gone, yeah, I'm gonna take that double push and just go for that 5 influence. Don't mean anything anymore. Or for me in particular, like, yeah, I'm gonna pin and then that model no longer exists.
That's where my sort of getting on tilt. Coming off tilt, you know. That's sort of when I've got a full stack on Corsair and I've spent like 2 activations just getting Kraken and everyone into positions. The scrum is in the best position it can be. Corsair's got that full stack on him. Someone's knocked down, ready for him to go in and just finish them off. And then you just go, oh, pinned. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh, there's nothing I can do about that. Straight up nothing I can do.
Yeah.
And it's just, just because of the nature of that character play, it's like, I can't do anything.
That's the irony in an activation like Corsair, is that in my team, I normally I don't like to rely on pin too much. It's usually too info, and I've got to do something to get my momentum going. Because if you fully load up your captain and I get first turn, I've got to start the turn and get the pinned off early to deny him. Unless I know you're going to make a move of a different character. The thing that comes into it, like when you go, I'm going to fully load up this model and I know that's the linchpin of your plan, my immediate reaction is to go, well, I'm not going to let you do that. Like that's the way I just deny you the player. Like, I don't get angry at players to go in. I'm going to do
the thing that makes me win.
Yeah. I'm going to try and actually win the game. I don't mind that element of it. I think it's when the randomness comes in.
Yeah.
Okay. I think on the game we played on Saturday, we started out on a turn, and it looked good for me starting out. I was like going, okay, Hearn's got the ball. I've got a bit of momentum. He can teleport. He can go for the goal. And I just didn't even get middling dice. I rolled. Nothing happened. And I like,
three influence, and it was three well below average results, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I just hit nothing, and your dice came really hot, and then you had the counter goal and all that shit, and it was just like, oh. At end of turn one, I'm 4 VP down, I felt like I've not touched a point of health on your team, when half your team literally have tough hide already going in, and I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
And I were able to scrape that back. But the weird thing is, even when I caught up to you in points, because the initial turn had me so angry.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I'm coming off the other game we played at the pub. I'm borderline furious. we played at a game club run out of a pub. I had a game atrocious. I had full stack on Varen, full stack on Hearn, and just nothing happened. Couldn't get my turn off, couldn't get clean enough to do what he wanted to do. JK's dead. And the entire game, by the time it ended, I was literally furious.
Yeah.
I could feel it in my face going, oh my god. Like, I don't even get to interact because of the luck being that bad. I think that's a big fork of it. But the irony in that game, when I got put on the back foot, like I said, I had activation where I'm going, I literally ended up going like, okay, I do that, whatever.
Yeah.
I do this. And instead of going, okay, just calm down.
Yeah.
What have I got? What can I do? And I was missing out on stuff that would have helped me.
Yeah.
Because I was in that mode of just like, I've lost, whatever. Roll out the die. Or I didn't hit anything. Big surprise. No. And I was having my little bitch. I was in such a bitch mode that I was denying myself extra, like, I was forgetting third and the defence I get. I was forgetting momentum and damage. I was literally just rolling for the sake of ending the game. Instead of going, okay, what am I doing here? How can I bring it back? What can I get away with? And yeah, just breaking out of that mindset mid-game. I think once you're on the receiving end of that tilt feeling, you start make it lead to a series of bad decisions that not only hurt your chances of winning or making a comeback. I think A, hurt your chances of winning. B, lead to other bad decisions off the bat of that. And then finally C, kind of ruins your game. I think the worst thing about being on tilt, even though you just kind of feel it at the time and you get carried away by it, at the end of the game, I feel like I've ruined it for the other guy. You've outplayed me. The numbers weren't with me, but to be honest, one of the games we played, he'd won that regardless. I had that thing of like going, oh, I've been really bitchy, and I've just come and kick the fucking board over and just like ruined your win.
Yeah, toys are out of the pram.
Yeah.
Cause the game we've just played, through a combination of you having like an incredible setup, played really, really well your first few activations. My first sort of three activations, I made the wrong decision, and it was the fact that I knew that I'd made the wrong decision that started to get to me, and I was just like, oh come on, I made mistakes here. Okay, let's keep it together, we'll go into the next turn. And then sunk far too much effort into, because of where you had deployed, everyone on one side of the pitch.
Yeah.
So I had Jack on that side of the pitch. So I put my scrum players on that side of the pitch. I had Jack on that side of the pitch. I was like, right, I'm going to get some push off takeouts easy, because there were people that we had models like 5-6 inches from the edge at turn one, and through a combination of activating things in the wrong order, trying to set up kills instead of securing the ball, and then sinking far too much time and influence into trying to set up those push kills, I'd realised that I hadn't actually made any ground. I just spent a lot of time sort of treading water, and at that point I should have like stepped away from it and just gone back to my normal play, but I felt like I had to double down. I was like, I can't waste this. I need to keep pushing for it. And then that's where like further time and further influence went, and you'd got Minerva out, and she had Harrier down, she was throwing out I Spy,
Bird's Eye, Cat's Eye,
whatever we were calling it, Katsu Curry, and I really, that game, I think one of the main reasons I lost that game is because I tilted so early. So yeah. Like at the back end, like at the top of turn two, I was already in the mind space of, oh fuck, I've lost. I was like, I've lost it. I'm not saying that, like, I think it's important, because what we've been saying so far this episode, it might sound that you're imagining us sort of toys out the pram, bitching out loud. It's all internal stuff, kicking ourselves. We're not
shouting at each other or anything like that.
Or like throwing dice petulantly.
It's the thing where you can feel it in the presence of the other person.
Mm.
Like in a casual setting, like we usually play casually. I think we take it more seriously than we should.
Yeah.
But we play each other friendly all the time. And in a tournament setting, when I can sense that they're on tilt, I don't go, ooh, I think it's a bit awkward. Because we're friends.
Yeah.
We get along really well. And so when I kind of have that friend thing, we go, I've kind of ruined your morning. So I've just come into your house and gone, yeah, can you make me a bowl of porridge? Yeah, I'll have this coffee. Oh, cheers for that. Anyway, you, Luke, go fuck yourself.
See you later.
Yeah, oh yeah, cheers. High-fiving myself on the way out. You know that scene from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World where the vegan police show up?
Yeah.
And then they're just like, yeah!
Yeah, it's that exact moment, isn't it?
But in a tournament setting, when I know I put them on tilt, I actually love that. It's one of my favourite things.
Well, it's like it's that thing of how we were saying that, like, once you've tilted, you sort of make the bad decisions stack up. You make bad decisions, you rush decisions. It just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. If you're there and you're there to win, and you can sense that someone's done that, then is feeling that, then yeah, you're gonna be pretty pleased, because you know that you're not the only person working towards your victory now. A part of them is going to be helping you out.
Yeah.
I tilted early when Minerva just had, like, you just had a hellish activation. Like, you set up perfectly. I made the wrong decision time after time, and you just punished me for it. And then I finally broke away at the top of turn three with Sakana to get the goal run. Missed the three dice goal, looking for 1-4. And I was just like, at that point, the light left my eyes, and because you were about 8-0 up at that point. I thought, if I get this goal, Angel's set up for intercept and get a goal back.
More importantly, like the way I had my model positioned, if you'd got that goal and Angel could get the goal back, I had all my models on one side of the pitch. So if I went, okay, I'll kick to the... I had all the models on the left side. If I go, oh, I'll kick to the right and leave it in safe, Angel will get it.
Yeah.
And that curves the day.
So your option was kick to the middle or to the right, where Angel would have just picked it up.
I don't think the middle are even an option. Like, I either try and kick it to my own model and hope for the best, which Angel can nab it off him in no problem. And she push dodges on nothing. Like, even with a 2-inch melee, the good thing about Angel is that she's got a push dodge so early, she can negate 2-inch melee.
Yeah.
If she's just on the 1-inch cuff, she can go, push you out one, I dodge one, and then I'm free. And she's got a very respectable jogging sprint. With a kick, it almost doesn't matter. But the thing with, if I'd picked it to my own model, I would have been, one way or another, it was going to stay where you could get to the ball.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact that he missed the goal, and by missing the goal, and Fahad was right next to it, basically just being a base to try and call intercepts, but I'd managed to pull to kind of right around, but where the scatter from it landed was on Fahad, it was like, right, the ball is now on a 5-0 defence model in cover. I was just, Sakana was so low, I was willing to do the 4-2 trade, but when that became a 0-2 trade, you went from 6-0 to 8-0 whenever you wanted it. There was nothing that could get out of that, because you had Cena and Fahad both ready to just furious in when he was
Fahad
snared.
Fahad went, got a bit of momentum, more importantly, charged away from Angel.
Yeah.
You tackled the ball off of Fahad. But at that point, it didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, because Sukarno's already activated, the ball's even more fit.
What I was actually hoping for there is, we were so close to the edge of the board, I was hoping that by having the ball back on Sukarno, when you killed him, you know, there was a 50% chance it would scatter towards the board edge, and then a 50% chance that it would go far enough to come off. So yeah. I was like, you know what, I might as well tackle it, because then that's a 25% chance that it's going to scatter from the middle where Angel can pick it up. So that's why I put it on him. But then when you killed him, the ball scattered onto Cena, who then just passed it near Hearn, and it was just like, oh, right, okay, this game's done. And like, that's the point. Like you say, at that point, 8-0, I'd already overcommitted to the Jack getting the pushes off, and instead of switching it up and just going for like damage with the Corsair and Kraken, I kept trying to rearrange them so I could get the heroic off the board. Because I'd already sunk so much into it, I felt like I had to keep going.
You got into the gambling mindset of... That's another thing about Tilt. I remember saying to you when I got super... Like, it's weird. It's not quite... I don't use the word angry. It's not quite angry.
It's frustration, I think. Yeah, it's frustration, but it's at yourself, because you are the only person who's allowed this situation to happen.
Okay, if a guy rolls 18 dice right and gets 18 ones, I'm not going to do anything but smile internally.
Yeah.
That'd put me on. Don't get me wrong, I rolled Cena charging and got nothing at all, and I'm not gonna hold it against the guy. Something just going. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I do the exact same thing. I think it's that combination of frustration, disappointment, and I think it's that idea of going, when you introduce the random element, there is a sense of like internal fairness to it. I know it's weird to say, like, if you both roll five dice each and you get nothing but one and you get nothing but sixes, you know it's random, but there's just a part of you that goes, wait, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Why do you get? And it's nothing to do. Like, it's not a logical thing.
Yep.
You turn around and go, well, it's dice. That's the nature of it. Like, everyone does it. Have you ever rolled dice and got nothing but one? You can go, they're cursed. I'm not rolling them.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense. It's just bad luck. If anything, statistically, you're better off rolling the one.
Yeah.
Because you know that lightning ain't going to strike twice. But I think there are a couple of things where. Like, for example, you kept measuring Cena's activation distance and going, Angel's going to stay just out of there. And I was thinking, that's fine for me, that's what I want. If anything, I felt like he almost should have come in and gone, right, if you charge with Angel, I'm a 5 defence model anyway. Yeah,
going up to a 6 on the defensives.
But yeah, when you did that, I went, I can't attack Angel, but I know she can't attack me.
Yeah.
So she's not coming into me and doing 4-inch dodge off Cena.
Yeah.
It eliminated that element. Of going, like, so when you were like, oh, the bulk over here, I know for a fact already you can't even, you're going to have to spend 2 turns just getting to me and then getting the ball back, and you're not probably going to do it. I think in Kim Conquer, there was a bit of terrain where it was basically a wall, and we're all on one side of the wall on the outside of the pitch, and then from the inside. And my models were coming up on the slight inside of the wall, and your models were on the out. And I remember you saying early, I should really. You said to me directly, I should bring Corsair into the inside, but I'm afraid. And you went, I'm afraid of the pinned.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go. It's one of the things where I wanted to say, but it's hard to like advise about going, I'm telling you what to do.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, I feel like take the pinned early now.
Yeah.
Because that won't last forever. And you've got drag. Better yet, you're dragging people I need out of the melee. You're getting them out into the open. You're freeing them up in other ways. Even then, Angel could jog in and just do a bit of crowding out to help Corsair out. That thing of going, I'm not afraid of the pinned, I've went round. Like, I think when you first think you denied yourself a great activation early in the turn, you're afraid of coming around and just getting pinned.
That's what I meant by it. It was one of the many bad decisions I made at the start of this game, and I think it made a huge, huge difference, because it changed my mindset for the rest of the game, because I was second-guessing everything I was doing. I was doubting myself, and I was also, at the same time as doubting myself on a decision I'm trying to make, I was wasting up, like, brain power on still chastising myself for all the previous mistakes. So, yeah, it was really interesting that the last two games we've played, I think they've been won more or less in our heads more than on the table.
That's what I love about Guild Ball. For a game, it's not... Again, if people think, like, oh, well, this model's great because you've got 6-8 movement or 7-9 movement and you've got great attack, so guaranteed or whatever. And I don't think primarily that's how the game's won. Like, I guarantee you, a top player, like your Easton, your Henry Kay, your Alex Box, all them guys, I bet you one of the first things all three of them will have in common is that when shit ain't going their way, they stay calm.
Yeah.
I've listened to Strictly the Worst, and I've never heard Alex Box even like raising voice. Generally, he seems like a really calm and chilled out guy, and I don't think that's a coincidence with a lot of these players. Like when I played Henry, he had terrible life in some of the things we played. But he never turned around and went, oh, fucking hell, I've got noble ones. I didn't even hit all that turn. Fuck this game.
Yeah.
He was just like, yeah, that whatever, that happened.
Yeah.
On to the next. Proceeded to roll over me. And that, yeah, and that's the thing. Funny thing, the last couple of games we played, we mentioned last episode, I've been on the losing end.
Yeah.
And again, I had particularly bad locking. So I came in with like the attitude of like going, oh, cool. Like I said, me and you are getting over that hump now.
Yeah.
It's not just me winning all the time. We're going in the ups and down period.
They're actually games now instead of...
I think this is where our level of improvement will go up and up and up.
Yeah.
Again, game and fighting games, best way to get a player better is to play someone better than you, and you'll eventually catch them up and start beating them. And then you have a feedback loop of, okay, you're doing that, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And you end just much, much better. There are plenty of people who have practiced games professionally and have played nothing but a couple of dudes and have ended up at the absolute top of their game because they just play, they keep at it. Another thing about being on tilt as well is that when you have a couple of really bad activations or a couple of bad rolls, in your head you go, you don't even anticipate middling rolls. So like, if you go fair and going, oh, I need two hits and I get a double dodge and I can do my thing.
Yeah.
If you roll a few hits and you don't even get a hit, you go from going, I only need two hits, to, fuck, I can't even get two.
Yeah.
I'm like, I may not even bother.
Yeah.
I'm only going to, I can't even get two hits. Like, when statistically, just, but you get into that mindset of like, I'm not even going to hit. No matter who I go with, I'm just going to get nothing but nothing.
And that's it.
You're already...
You've checked out upstairs.
Yeah,
and then
it's like, again, in fact, you get snared, mentally knocked down, mentally bled, and instead of going, I'm going to mentally clear my condition, it's going to be okay, instead of going, fuck it, oh, every condition, just single me out while I'm here, why the fuck are you call?
What's that, single me out, give me the Minerva's katsu curry and the...
I know, even now recording, I can tell, like, it's so hard to fight off the feeling, it's so guttural.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell, like, from just the tone, even though you go, the game's over, it was for fun, we're on the podcast now, we're having a bit of a chilled out time, we're getting into the chuckle territory. It's not a negotiate your way out of, it's something that can only get better with practice, and actually having a literal count to 10 moment, and going, alright, I'm okay. Like, okay.
In the grand scheme of things, this doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're fine. But, we're programmed to want to win.
Yeah.
Like, to do better. I think mastery and being great. Like, we'll have a competition of almost anything from, arm wrestling to eating hot dogs to go ball. Like, it doesn't matter. We don't have to be the best in the world at something respectable. And I think you'll see that in a lot of people. They like to just be the best at one thing. Collecting stamps, playing go ball, painting miniatures, collecting dice for that matter.
Yeah, I love collecting dice.
Bird watching, anything you want. There's a kind of inherent, I want to be at least the best I know at this.
Yeah.
I'll be great at it. And it's hard not to care, even over shit like that. It's not the thing where, if I turn around to go, like, if we had to explain this to someone who didn't know what girl ball was, I wouldn't be able to reach the end of the sentence without either chuckling in laughter or just hanging my head in shame going, what the fuck became of my life? And how are you feeling now after the game?
I'm still kicking myself. I'm still kicking myself because it was so avoidable. That steamrolling of 12-4 was so avoidable. If I hadn't overcommitted turn 1, 2 and 3 to getting that bloody push kill, if I'd just instead pulled back, which is something that I started to get quite good at one point, if things were going south, I just brought everyone back, right, fine, reset, we'll go back in, I'll let my players jog on, form back up and then go back in.
Yeah.
And I also got too into the momentum race. I was saving momentum instead of healing when it probably would have been better used
buying time.
Yeah. No, that was
one of the things, like, earlier in the game where you're going early for push kills And to be fair, I'm trying my best to avoid them. Kind of, the second you put Jack down on your side of the table, I knew I'd made them. Someone's going to get pushed off, almost guaranteed.
And it didn't even happen. No, at no point did it happen. The two kills I did get in that game were, instead of using Jack's heroic to get them off the table, I used his heroic to push Minerva out the scrum, away from her support. Well, she is the support, away from the sort of backup. So then I could just pile in on her without taking any crowd outs or anything.
Yeah.
Sort of, I used it to push her deeper into my sort of territory. Well, where we could then just bundle.
When you first brought Jack into Minerva on the first turn, when I'd made it so you couldn't get a perpendicular angle, I'd have gone around Kraken and he was acting as a column of which you had to push me around. And because ramming speed is always directly away, I knew even at best you weren't going to get that deep angle that you wanted.
Yep.
And you were only jogging anyway, so you couldn't continue to follow me up. And like, if you couldn't sprint, you couldn't push me, then walk around to get me in a good angle.
Yeah.
You'd only put free influence on him. So when you were done, and she was very close to being pushed off, to be fair, and any other turn, but actually I had an activation to get her back in.
Yeah.
And she'd already gone, so good, without the picture. No point in using it then. Later on in the game, when we got to like the last quarter of the game, I remember going, okay, what health are all these characters on? And I went, all of them pretty much full.
Yeah.
We'd been pushed around a lot, but no one had been taken to.
That's it, because I was taking the push options, but I never had enough to get that. I was always one or two away from the edge,
yeah.
At which point, at the start of each of their next activations, they just walk away. And that's what I mean by I was putting too much time into it. Instead of going, okay, fine, they've walked away, I should have either used Jack's pushes to get them into the scrum, or just done his non-momentous damage. Yeah. But instead of that, I kept pushing them back into the same position of basically relative safety, where they were just walking away again. And that's what I meant by I was overcommitting to that. I spent two, maybe three turns doing that.
Yeah.
You know, there was a point where her and Minerva were both an inch away, and if I could have got Jack in between them for a heroic, that would have been great. But then by that time, you'd killed him.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, on the opening turn, we might as well talk a bit about Minerva. Ironically, on that, on this game we just played, I won with a push, by pushing Kraken off.
That double push on four, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to look for that one point to get technical, and I was going, oh wait, yeah shit, Kraken got no defence for a minute. He's got 2-0, I'm almost guaranteed double pushing. He's got that giant fat base. Like, he has to have, like, yeah, because he's got his walk on. Mm-hmm. He literally walks on at 4 inch.
That's it, he jogged on at 4 inch, but like...
at an angle.
Yeah, that's it. It's like we've said in a previous episode, I didn't bring him in like 90 degrees. I brought him on at an angle to get him into the sort of, to be a crowd out. And so at that point, he'd moved 4 inches from the edge, but he was 3 inches off the way from the edge of the pitch, really.
Well, by default, less than four. Yeah. So literally, double push. And when you got 2-0 defence... or 3-0 defence.
He was either snared or knocked down, so it was 2-0.
But yeah, look, we've been playing with a new Minerva model.
Yeah,
the Falcon is the newest model.
Yeah, we tried. We played her on Saturday and on Sunday. We keep saying today, Sunday. So Sunday. We played her on Saturday and Sunday. The game we played on Saturday, she didn't. You didn't really get much work out of her, did you?
Yeah, she's. I won't go into all the statistics for the card, but she's got a ranged version of Singled Out, which gives plus 2 tack to an enemy model.
Ice Spy, Cat's Eye,
Eagle Eye, blah, blah, blah. Harrier, which we've already covered previously, and everyone should be, hopefully anyone who's playing the game Tonto should be thoroughly familiar with right around about now. The good thing about Minerva is that even though she's got relatively middling movement, because she's got 5-7 move, middling tack, 5-1 playbook, medium kick, 3-kick, all that stuff, 15 health, 4-0 defense, she goes down easy. But the thing that I like about Minerva is that she gets what she wants momentously early. She knocks down early momentously. Like, on one inch melee characters, being able to knock down early with 2-inch melee, perfect. More importantly, she got ranged. She gets her character play off her first hit momentously, and the buff ranged. So I can walk up to a Kraken-style model, hit him twice, and target a 5-defense angel and go, she's got a +2 attack, she can Harrier. The thing that I didn't like about Matagi, he had the one go, he got Harrier up, and then he was kind of floating around. He wasn't really providing crowd out, and he folded so quick. There wasn't really any reason to try and get him in the melee.
Minerva was really interesting because that that ice buy does exactly the same as singled out. You get the plus two tack, but obviously because it's not called singled out, there was a couple of times where you'd stack that with Hearn singled out. Yeah, it's got the 6-inch range, so you can trigger it off Kraken, throw it onto Corsair or whatever. But then I really liked how Minerva, she's got a trait easy pickings. So when she's attacking someone with less health than their Icy Sponge token level, they take an extra damage.
Yeah.
So easy pickings stacked with Harrier. Towards the late game, she goes from being this support model to actually being quite a killer, which is, it's really interesting to see her sort of transition throughout the game.
Yeah, for the returning model, she's not got spectacular movement. That's the thing. You really, to get the most out of Minerva, she generates 2-3 influence. To get the absolute most out of her, you need to be able to jog up. Like, if you spent one for the sprint, you've absolutely hamstrung your own damage potential. And yeah, you kind of need the 2 remaining influence, because she can't get a rap on her own playbook. She needs something else to help her out. And really, because of the way Hearn singled out stacks with Ice Spy, preferably you need her to go earlier rather than later.
Mm.
I don't particularly...
In a similar way to Mitagi.
Yeah, if in the Hearn Minerva manoeuvre, so they're pinching a model or whatever, in theory, having Hearn go first and single out and skewer them, lower the defence, would set her up nicely. But you know she's always got to spend the one for... In reality, you kind of... To get the absolute most out of her, you need a wrap on that first hit. Where if you've got the playbook card where you get, like, a charge for one influence, that might be really good. Preferably, if you want to get the absolute best of her damage out of her, you want the Harrier, you want the Ice Spy. It'll be weird thinking on how she interacts with the actual Falconers, who other people can set her up with Harrier already.
Mm.
And then she can come in with Ice Spy and all that. Or Blessing of the Sunfather, that would have been another great manoeuvre to give her. I just couldn't find the space for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, giving her a free character play so she can Ice Spy for free and then try and get the wrap. Because she gets the wrap, boom, Harrier, free damage, and then she's got 2 influence to fucking really have a go. Like, any model who can get +2 damage is by default great.
Mm.
No matter the circumstance. And yeah, when they come on in the game we were playing, you were bringing on models on Icy Sponge right into her.
Yeah. So the entire game happened on one side of the pitch. From my perspective, it was on the right side of the pitch, but just on my side of the halfway line.
Yeah.
So I was throwing models back in, and they were just getting chewed up and spat back out. I made bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, and you just completely capitalised on it.
It's like I'm saying, it's that whole thing of. Like, we can start a great opening turn.
Mm.
And again, I were on the receiving end of that yesterday.
Yeah.
I was able to claw it back, but that was a grind of a. I had to literally EQ out and just go, okay, I'm taking this to the. This is going to be a long ass fucking game now. just to go, like, a chance I could win. But that, on the game we played on Saturday, I got one. We were end of turn one. I'm like, I've lost this. I can feel it in my bones. I'm on tilt at the outset. The weird thing is, even though I was able to claw it back, I didn't. Even if I was catching you up in points, I didn't feel like I was winning.
Yeah.
At no point did I go, alright. I didn't have my Yu-Gi-Oh moment. Yeah. Where I'm like going, oh yeah, I've drawn my life like dragon. Okay, now it's the turnaround. You know, da 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 da. I didn't have that. Even if I was catching you up on points and overtaking you on points and ending in a good position, I'm like, I just had my hands on my hips the entire time going, how am I going to turn this round?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have been 11-0 at that point, and I still would have been hips on the hands going, I don't know, I'm going to turn this one round. But yeah, Minerva, I think a great character.
Do you reckon she's going to make you 6?
It's really hard for me to give up Chaska. I know Chaska isn't that good, but the fact I don't have to put anything on him, he can move up, he can put a snare down, it's... For free, that eats up a bit of your momentum.
Yeah.
And more importantly, because you've got 3 traps, I don't have to... It's not J-Cal where I go, I put my trap down and I have to hit it. Because if I don't, I've lost a good bit of his damage potential. But I've just lost the trap. Shit.
Yeah. If you slap that down in a bad position and it's there for the duration of the game.
I've lost one of his best abilities, generally. Chaska's not like that. An average game will only go on 4 turns. And you've got 3 traps.
Yeah.
So I may as well put one down almost every turn. So I can look at an area where I think you might go and go, snared. More importantly, Snared doesn't best work when you have to move into them.
Yeah, so because you can't clear it before you take it.
Yeah, so I can put him in positions where, like, if you've got a model who can jog 5, a 2-inch melee. If I put the trap 2-inch at my extremity, you'll, because if you hit it in within a 1-inch, it's effectively got a 4-inch range.
Yeah,
we've got the two inch for putting it down, the 1-inch itself, and then the 1-inch range. By the time you come into that trap, I cut your movement.
Yeah,
off
your
movement
ends. Yeah.
So even if you go, well, I'm snared, I'll sprint and hit you anyway. I've just taken an influence off you, which for characters like Jack or even Corsair, who need everything they can get,
And it really, really hurts the strikers.
Kraken in particular
really hurts the strikers.
Yeah, it just completely negates your damage dealing, your goal striking potential. And Chaska gets that for free every turn. I don't have to go, I'll give him one and he'll do it. I don't have to pride him out where I always have to give him one, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He can just potter around. He's a bit harder to kill than a couple of Falconer models. He's got 16 health, he's got 3-1. If he's in rough ground, he gets an extra bit of armour.
Yeah.
3-2, very survivable. Yeah. I love Hunters and I do think the Falconer models are great. But it'll be hard to pick one. Because the thing about Minerva, she needs the 3 just to do what she does, really. 2 minimum.
I was going to say, I think she can get away with 2. You know, it's on her first hit. You're going to get it.
Minimum, though,
for
it. I just wasn't able to manoeuvre where I could give a blessing and a Sunfather.
Yeah.
Like, preferably.
Yeah.
I give her blessing, I give her 1 influence, and she can put Harry and I fly down. No problem. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think in most situations, she's going to be a huge influence drain on a team that I'm already quite influence-starved. Yeah, she ain't in a vacuum.
But I think you get it back. I think that it's influence well spent. I think you... Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a gamble in where if you spend it and you don't capitalise on it, you've completely wasted it.
Yeah.
But if you spend it and you manage to get just 2 attacks off it, I think you're getting your influence back in the bonus dice, the bonus damage.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. In theory, great. Like, I do it every time.
Yeah.
In practice, I'm giving you a model super easy to kill.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I'm putting down Harrier for... Which, if I'm unlucky, I might not even be able to take advantage of. I can't take advantage of it on her turn. Not really.
Right, in Forum land, you've got Harrier or Ice Spy for free off Blessing of the Sunfather. You've attacked them... So, you've put Ice Spy down for free.
Yeah, give,
right?
give them the high.
So then she attacks to get Harrier down. Mm. Yeah. She's got 2 influence left.
Hopefully Rax.
Yeah, because let's say you're going in on a snared model because you're a Hunter's team. So then you've got your wrap, so on the first one, you're doing the Harrier, which you put down, because then on the top end of your playbook, you're hitting the 3, which is now going to 4. You know, maybe they've come back on at recovery level, you're hitting them for 5.
Yeah, in theory world, she can have absolutely spectacular activations. In actual world, where most models, if you come on, she doesn't get easy pickings at Ice Sponge, she gets it below, so she has to get them. You at least have to hit them once, which they can recover, and if they're smart, well, you should never have a model with half health just floating around anyway. In a perfect world where, I've got momentum, Hearn goes, gives her the heroic, he walks in, singles out, skewers, has him snared, crowding out, so that's plus 3 tack, she comes in with a free character play, all of that shit. Even at the very best, I'd have to wrap every single time to get maximum damage potential out of her. In reality, she's likely only going to be able to do 6 damage, and that's if she hits the top of her playbook. If they've got a point of armour, and frankly, mediocre defence, even on a 3 defence model, if they've got a point of armour, and I've got even Ice Spy or Singled Out helping me out, by the time, if I miss one, I'm likely not even going to get my best result. And she's just not that kind of damage-dealing model. She's support, and she should be used as such. I do really like her.
4-0, 15 boxes.
I am tempted to revamp, make a Hunter Alterna team for myself. Mm. Where I've got my core team, and I love them. They're not going anywhere. But I kind of want to play, a super-ranged team. So, a Matagi, a Gret, Minerva, Ferran, Fahad, and I'd probably have JKR, leave her now and just go full ranged. Have bleed and poison all over the place.
Could take Chaska for boombox if you want range.
I could do. The thing about JKR, he's great at picking off models.
Yeah, and then he gets the shadow light, yeah. So he just clears off again.
For Chaska, even if you're boomboxing, if you do the 4-inch and then get the 4-inch, they're 8-inch away. But most models have an 8-inch range. The thing about JKR, he's so good at dodging. And the thing about JKR is that can he dodge him at the end of his activation with whatever? He's likely going to get a double dodge on his last influence.
Yeah. So that 4 is usually 6, isn't it?
Yeah, usually. And the better good thing about it, you can manoeuvre around corners. You can manoeuvre into cover. You can go back into the embrace of your better model who can help him out. Yeah, I don't know what to think.
Yeah.
I do really like her. Do not get me wrong.
Well, it's interesting because we've played 2 games. One game, she may as well have not been on the board. And the other, I think she was a keystone to your winning.
Well, yeah.
I think that we've had both sides of the coin, you know.
Yeah, I think she's the kind of model, when things go her way, it really does go her way. When it goes wrong, she
borderline
useless.
Yeah.
And she's so easy to kill. It was sheer luck she didn't end up in a position where even Jack or a moderate killer could. It's one thing playing against fishermen, and you're playing a particularly fighty version of the fisherman right now. Against teams who even do mediocre damage, like Butchers, don't even think about it. Her best defence against the Butchers is trying to knock them down or push them. And with a double push on 4, if they're back to back, she's likely not going to get it. She's just not that kind of model. Yet.
Yeah.
Models like Ox and Boiler are going to meat hook, are going to just run through her. Yeah, a lot of. If she had 1 point of armour, it'd be a completely different thing. But because she's got 4 hero. And the knockdown taking her to dead territory. Yeah, it's really hard to. It's hard to call her not great. It's just hard to go. I feel like what she gives me, I'm giving up 2 VP for.
Yeah. So this sort of. From looking at Matagi and looking at Minerva, it looks like the Falconers are going to be so about positioning. They're going to be positioning and getting things in the right order, buffing each other. For like these, surely there's going to be absolute executioner models.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what actually comes out. Matagi and Minerva, for me, have support written all over them. They're not killers. But I think the Falcon, big killer model, will either be their captain or it'll be Scourge style.
Yeah.
Fuck you figure.
It'll be something on a 40mm base that does a huge amount of damage and potentially has a chance to increase.
It'll have a 2-inch melee. They're just handing out 2-inch melee right now.
It's going to be a 40mm base with 2-inch melee. Probably some kind of way to increase the amount of VP it gets on a takeout, whether it be Snack Break or something similar to Gravedigger, or maybe even something similar to Casket Time. You know, maybe the birds pick it up and carry the model away.
I'm genuinely curious. Like I say, Minerva and Matagi for me fill up very similar spots, just with a couple of bit of differences. But yeah, I'm really curious to what the Falcon can actually get. For me, the only thing I don't like about Minerva and Matagi as the Hunter's model is that they fill such similar roles. Even though the manner of which they do it is different, in reality, you want Harrier, you want the buff.
Yeah.
And while Matagi is quite nice in the ability to put bleed up, they operate in a very similar way, where they're bookend models. Minerva will be at her best when she's starting either at the beginning of the turn, putting you in the Harrier dilemma, for lack of a better word. Going, okay, you've got a model in Harrier plus 2 attack when they get hit. You can either leave them there or try and get them out.
Or she's best, second to last activation when you've got models that are committed where they are, Cena can just.
Yeah, I've got Cena, I've got Hearn, I've got any model basically with a stack of influence, second to last. And okay, I just need to pick out a model that's moved. And if you don't have the ball, they're about to have a terrible time. But even then, that's the nature of Harrier. If they get a counter attack and I don't knock down, which if I have to knock down, that's already eaten up a bit of damage I would potentially already be doing. But, more importantly, a lot of characters do have cheeky dodges and cheeky pushing. If they've got a relatively okay dodge, Like, if they've got a double dodge, even if I've got a 2-inch melee, if that, even if the Harrier is absolutely on the centre of them, a 2-inch dodge is probably going to get them out of there.
Yeah.
Or maybe it can't. I don't know. I'll have to think on it more. But there are... You have to have great positioning with the Harrier just to keep them in on the counter-attack. It'll be super common just to get counter-attacks and the dodge out of the Harrier just to annoy you or damage them.
Depending on what team it is.
Yeah, depending on team.
But the Falconers, so far, have they had a way to put Snare out?
No.
Be interesting to see if the next four, well, I say the next four, the rest of them, with them being a minor guild, be interesting to see if any of them bring it. The minor, they've always been sold as they're sort of, they're linked major guild, but slightly different.
Yeah.
And when you say Hunter's Guild to me, I say Snared.
Yeah, Snared, the absolute core of the Hunters.
So it'll be interesting to see how much they change it up there.
Yeah, I think, like, I'm never gonna bring them both together. It'll be a tough call. I'm really curious to what the Falcon. I can't wait to get the actual Falcon from the board.
Mm.
Yeah, I kind of wish, like, that's the problem coming on to this. But we've both come on the mic and gone, okay, Minerva, yeah, we've had the bad game, we've had the great game with her. But it's hard to generate that kind of excitement. She's not an explosive figure. And the funny thing is, right, when Mitagi came out, I said to you immediately, like, this next Falconer better be ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
If she's going to replace this guy on the team. And sure enough, when she came out, I went, well, I've done it, she's ridiculous. And as good as she is, yeah, as a matter of being on the board, the one thing that's putting me off both Minerva and Mitagi is that they go down ridiculously easy, even compared to the likes of Pelage and Surge, who I think, again, are another a rotting shack character who the second you kick the door in, the whole thing will fall down.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about Pelage and Surge is that they've got all this extra to pad them out. Like, Minerva puts her shit down and she's done. Pelage, if you don't kill her, you're dishing out damage, they're taking damage, the fiends are going up everywhere. She can be an absolute nightmare of a player to play against.
See, I wonder if this sort of... The way we've seen Mitagi and we've seen Minerva, they seem to do their best at range.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what the Falconers are going to be. You know, they're glass cannons once you're in... Like, so, well, they're made of glass once you get in their face, but they're going to be trying to hit you at distance. So like, basically, turn one, they're going to be setting up their model, so at the top of turn two, they can throw things at you and run away. I wouldn't be surprised if someone at some point has an ability where they can do extra stuff with Harrier.
Yeah.
Or like maybe like how Mitagi's got Hotshot, so he can shoot from... So he rolls his normal dice.
Yeah.
You know, so he's going to be rolling his normal dice with I Spy and Harrier both work on that. So maybe there's going to be some more ranged plays, because as well as Hotshot, he's got Snapfire.
Yeah.
So we might see some more let's shoot you.
The way I'm kind of feeling at the moment, it wouldn't shock me if the general Falcon strategy of Biff, a lot of the supporting models gang up on one model and there's like a fuck you model. So they like gang up on one weaker model to take them out, using that to set up support elsewhere. So the idea is they gang up on a model, hurt them, but the actual abilities like Harrier and I Spy go to other models, so one bigger model can come in and go, all right, I don't even need the support. I've got 4 influence. I do ridiculous damage or whatever. Harrier, Ice Fight, and they just come in on their own and just wreck everyone.
Right, so you're saying that Minerva, Mitagi, and maybe someone else are beating on... They're beating on someone over here, but then 6 inches away, they're throwing everything down.
If Harrier and Ice Fight were 1 influence each to cost, I'd say the play would be to keep people at range and then take advantage of the range. But because they're all on playbooks, I think at some point the weaker models gang up on a model, generate influence and momentum, heal up, and then set up their power model to move in, whether it'll be a captain or one of the others.
To dive off the top turnbuckle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just kind of do their thing. It won't shock me. And they'll probably have a goal striker too. I don't even know what their striker can do. Like Mitagi. That's fair. Mitagi, borderline striker. 9-inch.
2-8, isn't he?
2-8 kick, 9-inch sprint. Not bad at all. And he can dodge off range, more importantly. Mm. So he could hotshot, get an extra dodge. He doesn't even have to be near. Well, can you charge into hotshot?
Oh, surely not. No.
No,
because you have to declare an attack within
6 inches.
Oh,
whatever. No fun. Where's the fun in that moment?
Oh, yeah, it's not very fun.
Yeah, where's the fun?
That sounds quite boring. It'd be a bit more fun if you could charge into 6 inches.
On Saturday, I found Minerva really boring, but today I found it really fun.
Fun model. Yeah.
When she had plus 4 attack. What's that? You've blow ice and sponge because of a bleed I put on earlier. Yeah, Harrier.
Oh, she's even more fun damage. Now.
Oh, she gets more fun by the minute. I get 8 momentum off. Quadruple wrap. Yeah, go eat a dick.
What's that? You've been trying to push me off the board all game. Well, how come I win by pushing you off?
Here you go, it's done. I think even after all this, you're still like, the tone.
I've still been stewing on it.
It's hard to break out of it. Like, when we talked on last episode, when you had your really bad end of the tournament, with a game you had, and you're like, it's like, that was like a 4 hour long... We had
those days I was stewing over that.
Stuff up at night. To be fair, there's a guy in fighting game called Alex Fire, and he's been playing since he was 15, he's like 38 now. His nickname is literally Mr. Street Fighter. That's how long. And he had a big speech one time. He had a bunch of like kids in the arcade. He ran into an arcade or whatever. And he had a bunch of new upcoming professional fighting game players coming up. And he was talking about how he'd been up all night talking to another old professional. And the gist of it was like going, I see all these young kids and they're having a joke around and every time they lose and they're lending each other stuff and they're being all friendly and shit. And he went, me and this other guy are friends now. But he went, when a guy came into my arcade and beat me, I didn't sleep that night. And they're going like, and it's one thing to have a bit of a chuckle about, but that's literally the champion mindset.
Yeah.
Of, if you're going to be, it's one thing to be good and not have fun, and don't be wrong, if you're just a casual guild ball player, like, to be fair, everyone should be a casual There is literally no reason. It's like, it's weird to say, but it's one thing to be good, but to be great, you have to care.
Yeah.
I know it seems like a weird thing, but if you're going to break that level of going from like a normal good player to being a great, like, if you want to be a champion at the game, or any game for that matter, anything, you have to give a shit about it in a real guttural, instinctual way. Because you'll never play your best if you just listen to you for fun. I don't give a shit. That guy moved there, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I won.
To be fair, if you take it casually and you play against some people, there's nothing worse than taking a game, having a casual game, and the other guy. It's out for literal blood. But I think we're at the level now where we're both taking it seriously enough that we're bouncing off each other. Mm. And I think we'll find our level in that. But, yeah, if we're... Because you've got Vengeance coming up.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next episode about... I'll mention it to you. Maybe the next episode might be talking about getting prepared for a tournament. How are you going to go into it? Not what models you bring or who's got the new jank. I mean, what do you think about going into a competitive mindset where you want to beat every fucker in that room?
Yeah, because that's exactly my aim. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to.
Oh, the last.
I'm going to sit down. And I'm going to go right. Okay, then, lads. Everyone, take a number. Number 1 to 124.
Yeah. Took it. How long we all got? Yeah. You know what, first 2 VP, let's make these work. But even the last tournament went in, I think I remember you messaging me going, you know what, I'll be really happy if I get 2 wins, 2 losses. You go, I'll be really happy if I get like top 8. Like, the first place, so there's nothing. Like, go in there, and you don't have to literally start tipping tables over, but just going in there thinking, I'm going to beat every guy who can cross me. The 4-0 nothing.
I think it was singled out. I was listening to, and they were, and one of them said that they were playing someone, and this other person like finally got some points on the board, and just went, "Oh, nice one! It's not nil. That's what I was looking. That's what I wanted." And the guy said, I can't remember which one of you it was. Sorry, lads. They just said, "Well, I've already won then."
Yeah.
If your objective was to get some points on the board, if your objective was not to get to 12 VP before me, I have already won.
Yeah.
And that goes back into that mindset thing we were saying at the start. That goes back into how I was saying I was going into that tournament going 2 wins, 2 losses, I'll be happy. It's that thing of got to go champion mindset, give me victory or give me death.
Yeah, well, you don't, and again, you don't have to go, like, you don't have to be up at night crying if you don't get a first player. But the difference in attitude does generally help your game. If you're okay, if you go in going like, well, I don't like the team up again, I'm probably going to call this one off ahead of time. I don't care if that's like, again, when I played against Enrique, I didn't know the face, but I knew him by reputation. I knew he played a great Vet Rage, it's a great team. I don't even care which five Union models he pick. Vet Rage himself, it's a great team. I knew he had a powerful team, he was a great player, literally a championship player who easily could, he could win anything, and it wouldn't shock anyone who played. I didn't go into that thinking, well, shit, Enrique, I'm done now. I went, I'm going to beat Enrique. I can't wait to see the look on his face when I beat Enrique. That's the mindset I went in with. And I didn't go, oh, I'm going to hire my model. I'm going to do differently. I'll play defensively. I'm going to play my game and see how he does. I still went 12-6. Yeah. He didn't clobber me. And I even left that game going, you know, if things had been slightly differently, I'd have given him a right horrible time.
If I knew what Benediction did.
You fuck Benediction. Get rid of him. Fucking OP model, whatever. But it helped. It just helped a lot.
Yeah.
And like, here, in a casual, in a friendly game like we play, when I put you on tilt, in fucking, I'm like, man, when I hit good result, can I get really good damage? I'm like,
that's a yeah. That's a bear hug. But that's two bear hugs.
Yeah, on that left turn with Jack, where I like going, yeah, I'm gonna pin Jack. Because I need to do to continue to win. He's got free defense. I get it. He's pinned now. And that's literally how. Yeah, that just happened. Oh, he's snared and he's pinned. And
I'll just put the kettle on and make us a coffee again, shall I?
But yeah, next episode, your pre-vengeance episode, I think we're going to talk about that. How you go into the tournament ready to kill.
I'm going to get t-shirts printed that just say champ. I'm going to get a t-shirt printed that says 2018 Vengeance Winner.
Yeah,
you don't have to be a dick. I'm just going to wear it all day.
You don't have to be a dick on it. You don't have to shit people kind of going, what up, Luca?
and then when I lose,
to be fair, that'd probably work.
But then when I lose games, all I need to do is beat them to report the scores.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? You've got me thinking on it now. Just going like, oh, I'll put it in 12-8. And then when he comes up to going like, wait a minute, I won that game without him going, oh, what a golly little bitch.
Can you believe that?
Is that what we're doing there?
What high sodium levels. Tell you what, you're the seventh person to say that.
Oh, now that I'm champ, everyone's trying to bring me down. Last bit of news before we go. Being forged to doing wrecking models. Like that. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, it's the
metal.
It's the The email actually said the end of metal models, didn't it?
Yeah.
And there's Gilbo have tweeted saying that I think there's going to be two more unannounced limited edition metal models, yeah. And everything from now is resin or plastic.
Yeah.
The plastic, I really like. Don't
get me wrong, it's good quality plastic. And I backed the Dark Souls Kickstarter. I'm really happy with them plastic models. And they're even lower quality than the Gilbo one.
Mm.
They're like the original production plastic. I think, yeah, the Dark Souls board game plastic kind of plastic they cut their teeth on, and then they went, oh, we'll do I think Guildball plastic came after that.
Mm.
And I think they're great.
I really like them. That's the thing. I really like the plastic boxes of six that you get, like, you know, the farmers, the blacksmiths, the catchers. I think with each box that's come out, you have seen them progress, you know. You look at the models from Grange's box, and then you pick up the rat catchers, you can see that they're just getting better and better and better. Yeah. So I'm really happy with them plastics. I'm really happy with them. You buy the box, you get the tokens, you get a ball, you get a bit of terrain. Lovely. But the resin.
That being said,
it's like I think what's put me off about the resin is that I know it came down to whether the Indiegogo failed or if it succeeded as to whether we were going to get the originals in plastic. But if the originals were in plastic, I wouldn't mind. But it's the fact that... I wouldn't mind paying 50 quid for six models, a ball, a bit of terrain.
Yeah.
All the tokens you need to play them. I'm taking a bit of umbrage with paying 60 quid
yeah.
for resin. And that might just be because I'm fairly new, relapsing back into the whole wargaming hobby. I haven't actually got any resin models. I don't own any, but I've heard these horrible horror stories of, like, a summer tournament where the room's reaching very high temperatures, and then this like, fillet is just slowly starting to droop over the course of a day.
Resin generally is much, usually higher quality than plastic. Like, I've got a shitload of resin models. I've ordered from, like, Cromlech, shit like that. Got a load of vehicles in resin, but there are some... resin is like plastic. You get low quality and get high quality. And the high quality is spot on.
Which I imagine this will be.
Yeah. Maybe. Don't get me wrong, guys. If anyone from Steamforged is listening to this, we've been to Steamforged, we've done playtesting for them, we've met Jamie Perkins, all the guys.
The playtest event. We haven't... We don't playtest.
You know what I mean? Yeah, we went to the playtesting event, but we've been there, we've met them, we shook their hand. Dude, right? 50 quid for this box set. The one thing that I liked about the Farmers and the Blacksmith box set is that they were 30 quid in. And you're like, 30 quid and an in. Great. That, for me...
Well, it's 35, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah,
35.
Well, near enough. It was cheaper than a metal box set.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a 50 quid metal box set, you go, I get the team, I get what I'm given, I love painting metal models, I prefer metal, but I don't get the terrain, and I just get the team. I'm happy paying that for the metal model. Then the new Blacksmith and Farmer came out at the time, the plastic, but hey, you get 15 quid, and you get terrain, no brainer. Falcons are coming out. They're 45 quid. Well, okay, right. I'm saving only a fiver. But I still get the terrain and I get the team. That's a great guy.
And you get the card tokens.
You get a whole... like 45 quid all in. Bang on.
I'll tell you what it is. It is the fact that if you wanted to play... if you were new to the game and you wanted to play Falconers... and I, say we were two brand new people wanted to play the game. I bought Falconers. You bought... rat catchers.
Yeah.
Right? All we now need is to mark out a pitch. Yeah. We have everything we need to play now.
Yeah.
And that would cost 90 quid? 240? Yeah, probably £245 boxes.
Yeah, it cost a tenner to round up for dice we hadn't bought.
Yeah. So, that's it in. That's two players in. The resin boxes, you're not getting tokens. I don't know. I tell you what, I'm going to reserve judgment until I see the resin. I think it's only fair to do that, to see the quality of the
models. Don't get me wrong, it could come out, I could pick one up in my hand and go, you know what, it all makes sense now. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure on the production end, for very good reason, they're that expensive. But for me, the justification from going from metal to all the other was always the price point. It was never me going, oh, you know what, the plastic is so good quality, it's worth taking the hit. For me, it was like, at least they're cheaper. Mm. Like, if I had to, for the amount of money, like, 35 quid, right, Farmers, Blacksmith, all together to get the full Farmers, 70 quid. If I'd done the same with the Alchemist, 100 quid metal. That 30 quid shaving, for an extra fiver, I could buy the bloody Blacksmith. Like, it's like a compound effect of, like, for all the shit I get, I could get even more. Or for the 30 quid I shave, I could get a pitch, I could get this, I could get all this terrain.
Yeah.
The problem is, when you push, we've gone beyond 50 quid now, it's getting more expensive, not less. I'd rather lose the terrain and have relatively cheaper teams. One game I've been looking at getting to recently is Bushido. And one of the things I liked about Bushido is that you can get a full team of five for 30 quid metal. And they're comparable to Guild Ball. They've got the same lipped baking, the same kind of scale. At 30 quid, like, for what I'd have to pay to get the one mortician team, I could get two teams for Bushido and give one to a friend.
Yeah.
And it's a 2x2, everything else, whatever. All their cards are available for free. It's very similar. They've got a very similar setup to Steamforge. And like I say, they're probably a very good production reason they need to charge that much. But for me, it's really just not taking the hit in price.
I think that I've got such immediate reaction to it is because there's been the plastics.
Yeah.
If there had never been the plastic, so it was always 50 quid for a team because they were in metal, or 45 if you bought from a third party, and then it was just like, oh, for an extra tenner, you can have it in resin, it comes with the train, it comes with a book.
Yeah,
then I think that would be so different. I think it's the fact that we've almost been spoiled by these plastic teams coming in, and they're being a cheap entry level. you know, where the tokens were included.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I think the Pocket Team, the early Pocket Team are a bargain, which is great. I like bargains.
Yeah.
I'm a very big... And that's why when it was shaving, I like going, oh, I really like metal, but the plastic is so much cheaper.
Mm.
It evens out and you get so much more. It's a no, it went from a no-brainer to, wait a minute, I'm 10 quid out of pocket here. And I know you get tokens from terrain, but first of all, I'm not that yeah, starved with the resin, for terrain.
You don't get tokens in the resin.
Oh, you don't get tokens? Are you talking me out of it even if I go, look? Yeah, okay, you get the terrain. I'm not starved for terrain.
No. I would have much preferred, and I mean, I would have much preferred how... Well, that's, they've tried it. I was about to say, I would have much preferred you buy your box of six models, it comes with a ball, it comes with the cards, and then if you want, you buy a terrain pack. But they tried that, and it clearly didn't work. The Brewers and Masons terrain pack.
Well, to be fair, the terrain pack was much younger team.
Mm.
And don't get me wrong, the terrain, I've seen the terrain painted on the board. Really good quality. Clearly painted up a dream, but... Even though I like all terrain and goalposts and shit, I'd rather it just be cheaper. Because for 60 quid a pop, like, okay, for an extra tenner, I could buy a blacksmith and a farmer's team each and give one to a friend.
Mm.
Like, for me, having it that cheaper... like I said, I was just on Firestorm Games. They were selling the Bloody Coin Veteran Rage box set for 35 quid.
Why were you looking to buy that? Why were you looking to buy that?
Unrelated to anything. To be fair, we'll get into that next episode as well, I think, because we're going to start... Alex plays Fish, I play Hunters, but I'm not going to Vengeance this year. But the idea is, like, I'm going to play a bunch of different teams to get Alex acclimated to a bunch of different playing against different teams. But the one team that's probably the most popular and arguably one of the more powerful... I don't have, which is Vet Rage.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and get you acclimated. I think a bit of practice just against a bit of a Vet Rage team will do you wonders. Like, yeah, I'm gonna have fun practicing. Yeah. You know, Veteran Rage is a very fun team.
What a fun captain.
Boring to play against, but so fun to
fun
play.
Fun model.
He's 18 tack fun. When I get my maximum tack roll, I need to like put it in the bag and weigh it. I get half a kilogram worth of roll. Okay, I've just bought that for 35 quid.
Mm.
Alchemy, 45. Great model. Metal, hefty. Last a lifetime. You can strip them.
Mm-hmm.
Resin and plastic, it's not like it's impossible to strip them, but they're notoriously hard to strip. Like, the weird thing, listening to Justin talking, like, you know anything when you listen to yourself out loud?
Mm.
You can hear the strain in our voicing trying to justify it.
It's so the reasoning that's been given is the fact that the metal moulds are coming to the end of their life. And it's, I think the thinking there would be, I don't know how long they've lasted, but would they last this same amount of time again? Would people still be buying them? And you know what, probably no.
Yeah.
So if it was down to like an operations, like logistical sense, yeah, it makes sense. Are people going to be buying metal morticians in 4 years' time?
Don't get me wrong. It's a company decision, and a business decision. I'm sure it's completely justified. I'm sure they probably went through a bunch of meetings, hopefully, to go, okay, how do we make it as cheap as possible? What is the actual look? Okay, if it's going to be this expensive to make the new plastic team, how can we make that a good a deal as it could be? It absolutely could be that if you buy the mortician's new plastic for 50 quid, Steam Forge could be looking out for all I know.
Mm.
But as a customer, like, as much as I want to go through, like, I know these guys are their own company, I clearly like the company and the products they make, but as a customer, you've sold me on the reason the plastics will be good is because they'll be cheaper. And you've just kicked out the stool while you've been putting the plastic noose around my neck going, cheaper. I know that rope's a bit uncomfortable around the neck, but it's cheaper, don't worry. And you get terrain, oh man, yeah. Alright, a bit tighter. Just tighten it a bit. Okay, and you get all the tokens. Oh yeah, alright, I'll put it on. Okay, I'll try just the noose on just a bit. You convinced me. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty comfy, actually.
By the way, they're not 35 quid anymore.
Not 30, 50 quid, boom, to bang up the fucking stool, and now I'm like twisting in the wind. And, like, okay, if that's going to be their new thing, it's like, yeah, my first thought was like, shit, I've got to buy these metal top while I still can.
Yep, Yep.
First thing I did, go on Firestorm Games, go on Element Games, go, anyone on sale? Bloody coin, 35 quid, mine. Yeah. I'll commission 45 quid, oh, minimum 40 quid delivery. Yeah. And I'm going to be trying to scrap up their metal as soon as I can. Because I prefer them, flat out. And yeah, I'm not that desperate for terrain. I'm not that desperate for a goalpost. I prefer the homemade ones anyway.
Yeah. It's part of the fun, really,
isn't it? Yeah. And I'm sure for some people, love them. If you like what they're doing, and again, Steamforge, if you listen to this, God bless you. I'm sure you've gone through every hurdle you can to make it as cheap and cost-effective as possible.
Mm.
Unless you haven't, then go fuck yourself. Let's just assume for the kick of argument they have. I hope it works out. I hope the price point can be lowered. But for me, I am... There's not a Metal Mortician team for me. Or in a hypothetical universe where all the teams are 35 quid, it's possible that I could buy them on a goof.
Yeah.
I might... one day, I'm probably angry. Like, you've already got farming. But the blacksmith, I might go, you know what? I've done a bit of overtime. I've got a cheeky 70 quid lying around. Let's just buy him up. And add them to the collection.
I tell you what, you're completely right.
Yeah.
If, like, at the end of the month, you know, you've done a bit of overtime, or like you've sold a couple of models that you don't like for a different game or something, then you sort of go, oh yeah, go on then, let's buy one of these £35 boxes.
Yeah,
like I think that at £60, that is always going to be a considered purchase.
That is 50 quid. I know for a fact I'm going to live my entire life and never buy that Mortician team flat out. Like, if they went, we've got Mortician 35 quid plastic coming down the line, I very well could go, you know what, I quite like the Mortician, the new sculpts are great, that terrain's pretty nice, I'll drop the 35 quid.
Yeah.
And 50 quid, I could become CEO of Microsoft tomorrow. I'm not dropping 50 quid on that team. That's just honestly how I feel about it. I'm never going to drop that money.
Mm. It's a rolling change, isn't it? It's happening as the Miner Guild for that team comes available.
Well, yeah, the weird thing, they're weirdly competing with their own product.
Mm. I think it's to sort of make it easier to catch M all. Mm. You know, like you could just, for the low price of 150 something pounds, get the Rat Catchers and all the Morticians models in one purchase.
When you say it out loud, fuck, that's a hit to take.
120 quid for a full guild now.
Like, no one should ever seriously be able to go, should I get a full Mortician team, or could I potentially buy an Xbox One?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really hard to get motivated to even, like, come up with good points for it. I wish them the best, but, and that's the other thing, it's a matter of a customer. If I'm a raw customer, I know nothing about production, I just need 50 quid price point, I think, no. But more importantly, I look at the Falconer, who get the terrain, get the goal, get these tokens. And I go, wait a minute, why are they 45 and they 50? It's one of the things where, going in, I'm going to be like, wait a minute, why are they a tenner more?
Yeah.
And I get left. Why are the farmer 15 quid less than them? Like, yeah, you've literally made your own product, like, you're having trouble competing with your own product now.
Yeah.
We probably could get a long reaming email about this. Hey, listen, you don't know about production, right? And we don't.
I tell you what, that is a conversation I would love to have. I would love to have just an oh my god, it sounds so boring, I'm about to say it. I'd love to have an operational discussion on this.
Like, next episode, free production.
Well, I don't know, you know, it's like, I'm quite new to get back into the hobby. I don't know the process of a sculpt on Russ's screen coming into my hand. I don't know that process. I don't know the steps. I don't know what happened.
Next on the firm, how it's made.
Yeah.
Alex, we've got some interesting spreadsheet to look at here. Yeah, well, the imports from China are coming in. That's not very good. Imagine that a Chinese shipping container had 4-8 kick.
We recorded episode 0 and episode 1 on Wednesday and put them live.
Yeah.
They're on Thursday or Friday, and then we suddenly realised that we were already behind the curve, so now we should be up to date on the news. We're going to start pushing the podcast.
Yeah, we're literally going, like, on the Wednesday, we're like, hey, yeah, we've got Batagi out there, the new fresh model.
Pride.
Literally the next day, bang, Minerva's out. We're already behind, shit.
Yeah, so now we're up to speed. You've probably found this through a Facebook post or something, so tell your mates, download it.
I'm looking at... I believe with time and perseverance, we can break 35, maybe even 40 downloads. I'm looking forward to that.
I think we can do it.
And if you work at Steamforge, yeah, sorry, but if you work at Steamforge and you're still listening, get in touch. God damn it!
I would genuinely love to have a little chat about how.
Yeah, as much as we've gone on. Yeah, as much as we've gone on and reamed you. Like, if anyone from Steamforge is listening in and you wanted to shoot with an email going, hint why you're wrong, you twat.
Thefirmpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And at the firm podcast on Twitter. Anyway, thanks for listening. I've been Alex.
I've been Ryan. Thank you.